back to the Jeff Moore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Good Friday morning to you. What's left of this Friday morning, 34 minutes after the hour. We appreciate you listening. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. It works real well if you want to weigh in on anything that we've been talking about this morning. Joining us now on the line, or on, I guess, a remote connection, if you will. I'll explain to you the technology sometime when time permits, is our good friend, our usual Friday guest, and our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Good morning, Senator. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great and glad to be back in South Alabama.
Yeah, yeah. So you've been up in Montgomery. I guess, first off, the big story there is getting this gaming package through, the McClendon bill that became the Marsh bill. Then it became something, I guess, more palatable for you guys, some of you guys that were no votes initially. Talk to us about your decision going from a no vote to the yes vote.
Well, it's a good question. I think J.D. Crow had a cartoon about the Frankenstein. You know, this bill's changed an awful lot over the course of this session. You know, my goal along this entire process has been to get the best deal possible for the people of the state of Alabama from a financial position, for the folks to be able to vote one way or the other on whether or not they think this is a good idea for the state of Alabama to have a lottery, to have casino gaming. But my goal was always to try to make sure we got the best financial setup, if we will, the best deal for the people of the state of Alabama should they choose to go down this route. And I think that's what we've got here. We've got the best deal we could hammer out, and they put some free market principles in there, some competitive bidding in there, to make sure that if the voters decide to go down this route, that the taxpayers are going to get the best deal they can.
Well, and to get to that compromise. To at least give the entities that have been here, the existing entities that have been here, trying to make it fair. But to a lot of people, this appears to be a very strange arrangement. But that's kind of what you get when you need to go through a compromise and a compromise situation, I suppose.
Well, there's fair, which is a tough word in Montgomery. That doesn't usually happen. And then there's getting it done. And at some point, you know, you got to realize that over 70% of Republican voters polled have said they want to vote on some form of gaming and lottery. Now, while I would have loved to have had separate initiatives for lottery, separate initiative for gaming, separate initiative for sports betting, it was clear that none of those were going to pass and that nothing was going to get on the ballot. So, you know, what we've tried to do here is figure out what could we pass, and then figure out how to get the best deal from a taxpayer standpoint, so that once we put it on the ballot, you know, the voters could look at it and say, yes, this is something that I want. Yes, this is something that I think the state needs, or no, this is not something I want. This is not the direction I think we ought to head. And I really do think we've got, again, the best deal financially for the people that would actually pass. And now it goes to the House to see where we go from here.
The House component, though, it remains a little vague. Will they take it up? With such limited time left. But do you think if they have to, if you guys come back to a special session, that you would have something similar could get through again?
Well, I would hope it would be something similar. I mean, look, the Senate has spent the majority of this session. You know, we've certainly done other things, but this has always been the debate in the background. To think that, you know, from the governor's standpoint or the House's standpoint, that they're going to come back with anything that is substantially different from this and that it's going to pass is a fallacy. The points that are hard fought and hard won in the legislation that's now pending in the House need to be maintained by and large if the governor of the House thinks this is going to actually pass the Senate, or be concurred with in the Senate. Any significant changes will absolutely, you know, result in its failure, in my opinion.
Do you think the governor get involved at this stage of the game, though? It seems like that might be something that could be beneficial. I know, like, a lot of people in our part of the state have issues with this governor and the way other issues have been handled. But if you're just looking at this and you have somebody that's the face of it, that they can kind of be the spokesperson for it, do you think that maybe helps the cause?
You know, you mentioned a lot of folks in our area having problems with the governor. I'm tired of having problems with the governor. I'll just say that right now. It's exhausting. But, you know, the governor's office has not been present for a lot of these discussions. I think they've had two meetings. The governor's got a full legislative staff, none of which were present for, any of these debates, conversations, backroom conversations, hashing this out, you know, not present at all. With the exception of calling a few legislators over for two different meetings after the fact, after most of this had already taken place, there hasn't been any leadership from the governor on this issue. You know, I keep hearing from her office, you know, we want a comprehensive package, we want a deal that's fair for the state of Alabama. Well, we provided you one. I mean, here it is. This is a deal that is as fair as it's going to get, and it's a deal that'll pass the Senate and frankly has passed the Senate. So if she wants to engage at this point with the House and work on it, I think that's great. But I think it's time to stop with the lip service and the talking points and get to it. Don't stand on the sidelines and wait for something to happen. If you want to engage and you want to be a meaningful part of the conversation, then get after it.
Well, Senator, let me ask you this. How is the governor's involvement in this issue different from her involvement in, say, other things going on in the legislature? I know that she was heavily involved in Rebuild Alabama, but beyond that, is this a governor that really has been involved, or her office, I should say, really involved in the nitty-gritty of the Alabama legislature?
With the exception of Rebuild Alabama, the answer to that would be no. I mean, early on, this governor was very involved, and her staff was very involved in the day-to-day. You saw representatives in the hallway. You we had conversations on a regular basis. Her staff's presence on the floor was pretty constant, and that is 180 from where it is now. So I know that the administration is in contact with some members of the legislature, oftentimes just trying to kill pieces of legislation that they may not like. But the notion of you know, the governor being involved in the legislative process in the terms of trying to get something done, last time I saw that was in Rebuild Alabama, and I haven't seen it since then.
That's fascinating. Do you think what changed, or did they just figure out? It does seem to me, tell me if you think this is wrong, that there seems to be some kind of alliance or agreement or working relationship, maybe that's a more appropriate term, with the House more so than the Senate. And they just maybe view the House as the place where they're going to do their deal-making and then leave it up to the Senate to decide if the Senate wants to go along or not.
And that may be their calculation. You know, a couple of years ago, you'll recall when we started talking about budgets and COVID money and the strained relationship between the Senate and the governor's office, and the strained relationship really between the legislature and the governor's office, that I said you're going to see a marked difference in how the executive and the legislative function, that there has been a loss of trust. And I think that's accurate. I think there are a number of big issues facing this state, and leadership from the governor is important. Involvement from the governor is important if she wants to be involved in the legislative process. But I'm here to tell you, having been on the ground, you know, day in, day out, working on the gaming issue in particular, the influence from the governor has either been limited or after the fact. Now, she may try to choose to engage in the House. She may ignore that process and wait and expect for it to die and then try to handle it in a special session. The point is the flag is in the ground. The milestones and mile markers are out there. The points in this legislation, these multiple pieces of legislation that have been hammered out, I won't say are in concrete, but they're pretty darn close. And changing them, I think, would be a way to kill it quietly and deprive the folks of a vote on gaming.
Well, gaming, prisons, how about the whole idea of having legislative buy-in to any emergency response to the pandemic. You guys are nothing but a herd of turtles. You can't wait for the herd of turtles to gather to react to things. I think one of the more intellectually dishonest arguments this governor has made. But it just seems like the attitude toward the legislature from the executive branch, they view themselves as something that's maybe a little above it. It's not a co-equal branch. It's just one of these issues that we have to deal with. And you look at, you know, gaming obviously would have to go through the legislature, but the prison issue, just going around the legislature altogether, seemed to be their preferred method.
Absolutely. I mean, the comments are condescending. The actions are condescending. The prison's a great example of that. We're going to sign these leases the day before, the very day before the legislature comes back in. We're going to provide no information, despite numerous requests from multiple legislators, from multiple committees, about the details on these projects and how we're actually going to, you know, be required to pay for them. And then the information that you do get comes from an investor call that is reported by Bloomberg while CoreCivic's trying to rally up its investors by talking about, you know, really what a great deal they've gotten with the state of Alabama and how they've really tied Alabama's hands to make sure they're going to have to pay for this one way or the other. It's offensive, frankly. It's offensive to the representatives of the people of the state of Alabama, who at the end of the day are going to end up footing this bill, and their voices ought to be heard on this, and it's simply not happening.
Well, Senator, we got just a little over 2 weeks left in the session or whatever, and all before the session began, we had a lot of discussions about curbing executive authority. What we need to look at to do there, and as far as I could tell, there's been some bills. There's the Whatley bill and the Norgren bill and some other things along the way, but it doesn't seem to be something that a lot of your colleagues are really chomping at the bit to get at.
Well, the Senate has moved those pieces of legislation, of course. And I think that what you're seeing happen is very much that the House is holding that up, and that the governor's office is working very hard to make sure that those pieces of legislation do not pass. They are very much on defense right now with regard to a number of the pieces of legislation you just mentioned that curb executive powers, that deal with a response to some of, frankly, the overreaches of this administration. And, of course, as you might expect, they're trying to kill those pieces of legislation prior to them getting to her desk, where she may have to veto them. I hope that my colleagues in the House will move these important pieces of legislation that the Senate has taken a stand on so that we can regain the balance of power that is intended in the Constitution.
It didn't have to be this adversarial, it seems. There doesn't seem to be a particular incident other than maybe like the Rebuild Alabama Act. There were some members that, you know, didn't like being up on a whiteboard with a mark next to their name. But something happened after that that created this kind of this acrimony, if you will, between the two branches of government. Is there something you could pinpoint or something you could point to? And I'm not talking about your experience personally, but just the body in general. Was it the COVID relief money, you think?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I mean, you know, when the COVID relief money happened, you know, that issue happened, and the executive amendment to the budget supplement came back. You know, I had a lot of my colleagues look at me and go, "Boy, now we know what you're talking about." My experience, you know, revolved around the I-10 bridge and this my way or the highway type of approach, and then my colleagues started seeing that when it came to budget issues, when it came to COVID relief money, when it came to, you know, pandemic response, when it came to closing down businesses and picking winners and losers. You know, the idea from the administration from then on had just been, listen, we're going to do what we want to do, and we don't really care what you think. And that's not set well with a lot of my colleagues.
Well, I guess I don't know that it even gets better, but it does. It's to get these big ticket things, these legacy building achievements. If we're looking back in history, says, you know, you look at other governors that were able to do this, they had kind of a good working relationship with the Alabama legislature. It just appears that doesn't really exist as a whole, maybe parts of it, but not as a whole. And I think ultimately that's going to be what, you know, holds this governor back unless that changes anytime soon. Do you think that it could change anytime soon?
Well, there's an election coming up, and that could always make a change.
Well, yeah, and you get some maybe new members, but I guess if she runs again, and I think there's every reason to believe she will, then, is this where we're going to have to deal with four more years of this kind of weird, awkward back and forth between the Alabama legislature and the governor?
Well, I sure hope not. I mean, look, the evidence is there that if the administration works with the, works with the legislature, then they can be very successful. Rebuild Alabama is a good example of that. But if they don't, then they're playing defense, then they're fighting and back and forth, and it results in a quagmire, and that's what we've had since then. And that's no way to govern. And I hope that, if this administration, if the governor decides to run again and if she's elected, then we see a different tone and a different way of dealing with the legislature. The first year really worked pretty well. And then after that, it went downhill and went downhill fast, and it's stayed in the ditch since then.
Well, Senator, I started to get bogged down in a discussion about the dynamics of the executive and the legislative branch, but we're up against a break, and I always appreciate you making time for us. So let's talk again. I guess we'll do it all over again next week.
Thanks for having me.
All right. That was State Senator Chris Elliott on the program. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.